Blog Talk Radio.
Inner Healers is a worldwide community of people who believe healing comes from the inside, as well as all the answers needed to live a happy, healthy life. As such, I set the Inner Healers Radio, an online talk show on alternative medicine, to provide life guidance and help people connect through emotion with their natural inner state of health. With this radio and the help of all our guests and followers, we hope to create a space for sharing our lives online. Listen to your favorite spiritual and master teachers, authors, psychologists, channelers, healers, psychics, music therapists, and more. My name is Luciana Stiglitz. I'm the founder of Inner Healers, and I will be your host in this adventure. May you allow yourself to enjoy it.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to our Inner Healers Radio. My name is Luciana Stiglitz, and I will be your host today. Here in Peru, we're having an amazing Saturday. We're filled with trees and birds, and we're so happy to have today with us Keter Brown. According to him, it's no longer enough to simply focus on healing the emotional wounds of the past. Finding your passion in life and following your beliefs. We live in a world that is crying out for the gift of medicine that you alone carry, a gift that you came here to deliver. We must shift our healing methods from a pathology-focused paradigm toward a community-based, eco-spiritual responsibility focus, utilizing the ancestral wisdom and ritual methodologies of the past with our eyes turned toward the generations that are to follow. Our great-grandchildren are watching to see how we live our lives so they know what to do when they get here. His prayer is that we will all become ancestors to our great-grandchildren, and we will be proud of them. Keter S. Brown is a ceremonialist, licensed psychotherapist, shamanic practitioner, intuitive, teacher of psychological and spiritual awareness, and the director of Rites of Passage Council. Over the past 30 years, he has developed an effective and unique approach to emotional and spiritual healing by bringing together his depth of clinical knowledge of experimental psychotherapy with more nature-based indigenous wisdom teachings and healing methods from around the world. Help me welcome Keter. Hello, Keter.
Good afternoon. Hi, Luciana. It's an honor and a privilege to be with you from the mountains of Western North Carolina.
Good evening. Thanks much for being here with us today, and happy birthday. It was your birthday yesterday. Happy solar return.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes, it was my birthday yesterday. So we start around the wheel once again.
It's amazing. So for those of our Inner Healers Radio listeners who might be reaching for you for the first time here, who is Keter Brown? You have a long professional history, which we will discuss during the show, but in short, how would you define yourself within your community?
I would define myself as a healer who integrates the indigenous shamanic wisdom teachings of the past with more of a clinical perspective as well, as far as working with people, so that my background is a blend of those two worlds. I focus on doing lots of rituals and ceremonies within communities and also individually with folks. And I also would like to acknowledge those who have been my teachers along the way, and a couple of those would be Melodoma Somme out of West Africa, and some of the indigenous African teachings and ritual methods, and also Will Rockingbear of the Cherokee Nation here in North Carolina, and all of their teachers as well. So I'd like to acknowledge those that have come before me that have passed down a lot of these ancient teachings and knowledge from the past to help us navigate the road ahead as we move forward.
Term healer. For our listeners, in your words, can you please explain to them what a healer is? What is it for you in your words?
So for me, when I use that word healer, because I know that gets used quite a bit, it's a more expansive paradigm in terms of how I view people and how I view what they're working on and what changes they're approaching. So healing has a context of, as the Lakota say, all my relations. And when they say all my relations or homotakwiasan, they're not referencing just relationship with humans. They're also referencing relationship with the entire non-human world and also the ancestral world. So healing takes into, the way I approach healing takes in the scope of awareness that, as the old ancient Celtic proverb says, the troubles in this world can only be healed from the other world. And the troubles in the other world can only be healed in this world. So that there's an awareness that relationship with ancestors is an essential part in how we navigate forward into our lives. And in that indigenous perspective, it is understood that simply being dead, while a prerequisite to becoming an ancestor, doesn't necessarily make one an ancestor. And it's the struggles of the turmoil of the dead that creates most of the challenges and difficulties for the living. And this is more of a shamanic or indigenous perspective of healing. So that healing takes in that entire scope of awareness in terms of relationship to our ancestors, relationship to the natural world, as far as what community is or what a healthy relationship to community is referencing.
That's a beautiful, profound definition of the term healer. Thanks very much for sharing this with us. So around 2.5, you were propelled out of a car and were in a coma for several weeks. How does that near-death experience influence your life perspective now?
Well, as a child, that was the second near-death experience. One was at birth when I almost died at birth, and then there was the car accident and being in a coma. And then there was another one where I was went through this French glass door and sliced my arm open when I was about 3.5. Where that fits into what I do now is this association with death as an ally. Looking at death as an ally in the context of how to live one's life. And those near-death experiences followed on the heels of my two namesakes. My name is Cater Stevenson Brown. And so Cater, before I was born, died in a house fire. And Steve, before I was born, he died in a car wreck of a head injury, no less. And so I happened to be born on the same day of year that Steve died of a head injury. And as I came into this world and had my car wreck and had a head injury and in a coma, what I think is I cleared that as far as my life goes. But it puts me into a relationship with understanding death as an ally. My work, my life's work gravitated initially toward working with the indigenous in what's known as a vision quest ceremony, a rite of passage ceremony, and those types of ceremonies are considered death and rebirth passages in a way that we think of life as beginning at birth and moving along a particular linear timeline to death. And initiation, such as a vision quest ceremony, initiations or rites of passages begin with a death and end with a birth. So as I came to understand these experiences in my life and reframe them from a different perspective, I saw them as great teachers and also assisting me of how to again, see death as an ally and how to work with ceremonial initiatory passages or rites of passages with people.
You mentioned the mountains. You were attracted by nature since you were 13, 14 years old. When you wanted to go out in the wilderness under the guidance of an elder of sorts and be left out there after some preparation to then return?
Right. So this, I have always had a relationship with nature. The first part of my early childhood was growing up in the marshlands of Savannah, Georgia. And so that my backyard dropped off to the marsh, to the seagrass, to the ocean, and tidal creeks. And those were my initiatory playgrounds. And then when I moved to North Carolina, the woods and the mountains and the forest became my playground. What I see now is that early desire to be taken out into the wilderness under the guidance of an elder and then left for some time by myself was an initiatory longing that I believe is present in everyone. It's what I call it's in that bone memory, this desire for initiation. And it rises up in one's life at different times. I think some of the first times that innate bone memory of initiation that can rise up is around that 13, 14, 15 age that it rises up in our culture. And if there are not elders around to recognize that that's what's wanting to come forward, it often goes underground, as it did for me, and it didn't rise up again. Until my father's death when I was 32. And then the memories of that initial longing resurfaced. And that's when I began to pursue fulfilling that longing to be initiated in the wilderness in that way.
Mm-hmm. This reminds me of Joseph Campbell's book, Hero with a Thousand Faces, where we are called to become the hero of our story, to be able to be of service to the best of our abilities. Does this ring a bell with you? How do you think becoming the hero of your story has been helping your community?
To become a healer of your own story or is to get acquainted and become familiar with your own personal mythology. In an indigenous culture, there's a paradigm of understanding that would go something like, before coming here into this world, you would have made agreements with your ancestors about a particular gift that you saw was needed here. And you would have made agreements and formed alliances of relationship with ancestors that also carried these gifts. And so then it would be the very desire to deliver this medicine gift that brings you into this world. Once we get here, those initiatory passages that we either intentionally and consciously put ourselves through or unintentionally and unconsciously go through are designed to activate the memory of those agreements and the memory of the gift that one came into this world to deliver. It's a familiar story in terms of also in many indigenous cultures, once when a child is born, they will often go for a period of time when they're very young to live with an elder or live with a grandparent in the community, in the tribe, for the purpose of receiving a name, a type of medicine name, we might call it. And the medicine name is designed to see within that person the gift that they carry and give them a name that is inscribed, I would say, elementally with the wisdom of how to navigate into their name, into that gift, and deliver that. there's a saying in South Africa that I learned from a young man I work with. When he left South Africa at the age of 8, his grandmother said, "Follow your name." And what that meant is live into the name that we gave you. And again, in order to do that, one has to become aware of their own personal mythology. And the wounded healer aspect of identity is that we're not just healing the challenges that we have encountered in our own biography. We're also healing the challenges that our ancestors carried, so that the work and the healing work that I do helps them heal as well. It's like they say the ancestors are thirsty, and what they're most thirsty for are the tears of the living, because it helps them heal. And as they heal, they help us heal. And so again, there's this reciprocal relationship that's much broader than think of in our own challenges or wounds as being very individual to ourselves, when in fact they're much more connected ancestrally in terms of what we're working with and working on, and also the allies of healing that are available in terms of our own work.
At age 25, you became a licensed psychotherapist. When you see this in retrospective, when you think about the population you wanted to work with back then, what do you think made you walk that path, and how does that relate to your work now?
I think walking the path that led me into the field of psychotherapy at the age of 25 was the, in the world that I was in, that was the designated path to becoming a healer that I could recognize. And then it could be recognized by the culture. It was a way to move in the direction of the things that I was interested in, and that I could also begin to blend nature and wilderness into the healing work that I was doing with people and as a psychotherapist. And so it was, each culture and each time in history has ways of identifying, as David White says, various ways to belong to the world. And the idea is that one find or navigate themselves into a path of belonging to the world that matches the very gift that they came in to deliver. So I think in a way it was more about remembering. In Africa, they say all memory is simply remembering, or all knowledge is simply remembering. And so this way of navigating yourself into a life's path that is resonant with your sense of identity is more that you are remembering who you are as opposed to learning new information. There's the young man I referenced earlier, the 17-year-old that was from South Africa. When he told me this story about his grandmother and about this follow your name, in my work with him, it impressed this same message upon me that you're speaking of. How does one know? Or how does one navigate into that life? And I ended up writing a poem that came out of my work with him that I'd like to share with the listening audience. And the poem is called Follow Your Name. And the words are, follow your name. Pay attention, pay attention. be careful not to distract yourself from yourself by focusing on the obstacles in your life. Focus on the delivery of your medicine, not on the stories in your head where you recount your limitations and loss. Do not indulge in such self-importance as a way to avoid taking responsibility for the gift of medicine and healing that you came here to offer. You are the heroes and the heroines of your own story. And if you are not initiated into the bone memory, into the mythology of your own life, you will likely be living an existence that is not entirely your own. The amount of turmoil in your life is proportional to the degree that you are not aligned with your medicine. And the life you know you must live is the one standing just a few paces in front of you, looking back over its shoulder with eyes wide, waiting for you to remember. Apprentice yourself to yourself and move to the frontier of your own imagination, the place where you live in the absence of story, the place where the sharp edges of this unfolding moment demand your full attention. Where are you? Here, you reply. Who are you? This moment, you reply. Pay attention. Pay attention. May the name that you carry be one that carries you into a story that feeds your people well, those in this world and in the other. So it's a poem that speaks of that that deep listening and awareness, finding those ways to navigate ourselves into the life we came here to live.
That was so beautiful. Thank you so much. You consider yourself an intuitive. In your experience, what does that term mean? Is it the same as imagination? How does intuition relate to a clinical practice?
Imagination is a skill set that enables the intuitive. However, that which I call an intuitive is not simply imagination. Intuitive has to do more with what in psychology they may call empathic resonance, so that one empathically connects in with the one that they're working with. And so the information coming back to me as the healer comes through different channels of awareness. There's the information in context of their story, which is often the least important. Then there's the information that comes in either kinesthetically, it's felt in my body, images that come to me, sounds, like all of the sensory experiences of the information that come in context to working with somebody that aren't directly connected to what they're saying. So empathic resonance is connected into an energetic field of information that is both present to the individual and present to the space that we are in. And present to the world of ancestors, to give you a story, a brief story that might exemplify that. Some months ago, I was asked to do what's called a house clearing, just to go into a house and clear the energy and the residues of energy that were existent from the prior owners, the ones that lived in the house. And so as I went into this house, I simply walked, and the house was completely empty. So I walked around each room of the house, simply opening myself to notice what showed up in my awareness without me efforting to think about it or find anything. and then going to that particular room where there seemed to be the most energetic activity. To shorten the story a little bit, I would say that what happened is there was the awareness that someone had died in this house. Although when I checked in with them, they seemed to be not in turmoil. But what came to me was this person's name. I'll just say the name was Samantha. And having no context or what that meant, Samantha, I did some more investigation in, and what came was that the woman that died in the house had a friend named Samantha, and she needed to get a message to her. And I said, you know, investigate, what's the message? The message is be brave. Who's to deliver this message? It's the woman's husband that she had while she was here. So I took that information and had further question about what be brave meant. And then what came was this song I had never heard of. Turns out there's a Sarah Bareilles song called Brave. Very powerful song. And so I took this information back to the owner of the house, not really sure if they would even accept what I was telling them. And then it turned out that the woman's husband did know somebody named Samantha. It was somebody that she had befriended during the last year of her life. And this person was going through a very painful breakup. And the delivery of this message and song, Be Brave, had very significant potency for this young woman in her life. And so when we talk about intuitive or empathic resonance, we're talking about connecting into a field of information and relationship, spirit world, to the ancestral world, where you work in collaborative effort, as I did in that, to deliver this important message to this young woman from somebody that already crossed over. So that's one. When you work shamanically and indigenously, that's often the field of information that I would work with would include that kind of information. A much more simple example of intuitive empathic resonance would be I was working with a client, and as he sat down in the room, I closed my eyes and I extended my energy to include him. And what I noticed was that I had all of a sudden this physical pain in my neck on my left side and in my hip and in my ankle. And then I saw this man on a sailboat out on some great lake, and he was happy, he was excited, he was smiling, he was in the sunshine. It looked really healing for him. And I got all of this information in about the first, about 10 minutes of sitting with him. And then I opened my eyes and said, you know, I just want to tell you what I saw initially. And I was talking about this pain on the left side. And he said, that's really odd. I fell off a ladder and I injured my neck and my hip and my ankle on my left side. And then I told him about the image of sailing. I said, I don't know what it is, but it feels like this is really important for you to do. And he said, I haven't been sailing in a long time and I really miss it. And I said, well, I think it's going to be good to get out on the water again and to, put yourself under the guidance of the wind and the sails and the salt water. So that's another brief example of opening your field to awareness so that information simply comes in without looking for it. You're noticing, not so much we're noticing what comes in all by itself without effort. It's something I teach therapists to do when I do trainings with therapists on empathic resonance of how to open themselves to that field of information when they're working with their client and how to learn their own symbol system of interpretation. what things mean for them when they pick up certain forms of information, whether it's visual or kinesthetic or auditory, the different ways information could come into to our awareness that is not directly connected to the content of a story that somebody's sharing with us. Those are a few ways of understanding intuition. Now, imagination, when you spoke of imagination, are they the same? Imagination is often referencing your own personal symbol system of how to navigate the intuitive. We live in a culture where, at least here in this country, I can speak to since I'm here, where what is getting lost is imagination and the ability to have creative imagination, because everything is simply provided through stimulation, often through electronics, where one doesn't get to exercise imagination. They just get stimulated in terms of the information that is delivered to them through technology. And so what happens when people are still and quiet, as if they were to walk in the nature, the repetitive dialogue or inner dialogue that just rolls in their head, it's like it's hard for it to stop. It just becomes a constant, almost like an agitation. When I take people into the wilderness, I'm often notice it may take a day, two or three or even more before their thinking mind begins to stop. And what replaces the thinking mind is awareness. And bringing full awareness and consciousness to the moment, which is also the realm of imagination. So that's how I see those two things as being different yet supporting each other, the imagination and the intuitive.
As I was listening to you, I was thinking also on, clinical pathologies, when sometimes a person thinks that they are getting intuitive information when they're actually going through some kind of mental sickness. Is there a way to clearly differentiate when one is having certain intuition to when somebody should be for help?
If I understand your question correctly, because there's a little bit of breakup in the words, how to differentiate between clear intuitive perception or guidance when one is in a going through a transition or a difficult passage, and what might be helpful or non-helpful? Is that the question?
Yes, it could be like that, yes.
Okay. So, the first thing that comes to mind is practice, practice, practice. The tendency for us to want to project meaning onto experience is much stronger often than our ability to navigate clearly and cleanly into an intuitive information. Like what's coming in from the outside, what's simply a projection of our own psychological makeup on the things we're experiencing. So learning to practice that skill, like any skill or exercise of intuitive perception, and getting with someone that can help you learn to navigate the two. One of the in my late 20s, early 30s, one of the things I noticed is that information that comes to me, for me, it's often in an image form. And it interrupts my usual thinking process. Like it almost comes in and stops whatever I'm thinking. It doesn't seem at all related to what I was thinking. And it just comes in, and it's almost like a startle awareness. When I told you the example of that house clearing, when the name Samantha came to me, it came in that kind of context. It just was a startling, like, where's that coming from? And when the words be brave came in, it had nothing to do with what I was thinking about. So what I've learned for myself is I watch for that type of interaction with the information coming in terms of what I consider to be more accurate. If we operate mostly in the mental field, and our thinking becomes intertwined with our perceiving intuitive information, then that field of awareness, while it's not completely inaccurate, it's a little more suspect for inaccuracy because it's also intertwined with our thinking mind. When we can shift out of our thinking mind and drop down to a deeper level of awareness, what Carlos Castaneda used to call it the second attention. I call it sometimes ritual consciousness or deep awareness. So that when we drop out of ordinary consciousness and start perceiving information from that context, it often has much more of a clear accuracy to it than if we're engaging it from our thinking mind. And then a third level of awareness is where we're actually experiencing a disembodied form of experience in which we're clearly have the sense of fully being somewhere else experiencing something else. And the information we gather there can often be much more accurate. So these three levels of awareness is often a measure of the accuracy of the information we can gather. In shamanic journey work, when one does a shamanic journey, their experience of the journey moves from one of those three places. Either it's a completely mental thinking journey, or there's a sense of sensory experience, like there's a deeper awareness and connection that's beyond the thinking mind, or there's a complete out-of-body experience where they actually see themselves and experience themselves being completely somewhere else, not in the room journeying. And I guess for me, I found that each of those levels often indicates a cleaner or purer form of information coming in. But I would say for most people, learn to quiet your thinking mind and shift out of ordinary consciousness by taking a walk in the woods or just sitting still long enough that your thoughts quiet. And that'll give you access to that information that's more intuitively accurate. And there's lots of ways of doing that that many teachers can offer people. But all of those different ways have to do with quieting the inner dialogue. Once that's quieter, then the perceptivity and receptivity of intuitive channels of information becomes more accurate. Is that making sense?
Yes. Thank you very much. So, you were raised a Catholic. Knowing the cross is a pre-Catholic symbol, what meaning does it have for you?
Well, growing up Catholic, I certainly had a familiarity with ritual. Although for me as a child, it became what I call status ritual as opposed to radical. It just became kind of habitual experience of watching certain things done. For me, the cross also represents when I go further back, a pre-Christian symbol where it had four equal sides, and it was a universal symbol of protection and a four equal-sided cross. And it had a very potent role for me when I first went on, when I went on my first vision quest, and that I had been sitting in a church thinking about doing this initiatory quest, this this vision quest ceremony. And I reflected on my upbringing in Catholicism. And for me, it was actually, there were parts of it that actually really, really good. And I appreciated some of my experiences. And so I thought, in honor of my upbringing, I will take a small cross and carry it with me out on my vision quest. I'll put it in my medicine pouch, and I'll carry it with me when I go out on the mountain. And I was in the process of thinking this while I was in the actual church service. So the church service ended. And this was a church I'd never been in but this one time. And there was a tap on my shoulder, and I turned around. And there was an old man and an old woman standing there that had to be, I'm guessing, 6'3", because I'm 6'1", and they were both taller than me. I had to, my eyes had to look up to see them both. And both had and seemed to be in their 80s with long gray hair, and they both looked at me, and the old man said, "Here, I'm supposed to give you this," and he reached out and put that small cross in my hand right at that moment. And so it, the cross for me became an acknowledgement of the calling, an actual experiential part of my calling into this work. And ended up taking that with me out on my first Vision Quest ceremony, taking that small cross. So it has personal reference and significance in my story in that way.
That is beautiful. Do you believe in prayer? When, if you pray, when and how do you pray? Do you suggest we pray? What are the benefits of including prayer in our daily lives?
So, yes, I absolutely believe in prayer. As one of my teachers said, you want to live your life as if it were a ceremony. And to me, that is living your each life in a context of gratitude, which is a form of prayer. To understand prayer is not simply a list of requests from the sacred, which we sit down, okay, I have my list of requests that I need based on the amount of turmoil I'm in. Prayer also comes in the form of gratitude and how one lives one's life. Prayer comes in the form of grief, to open the channels of expressing healthy grief in and of itself as a prayer. Authentic expression of oneself is a prayer. So I think of prayer not simply as a pause in time where we stop and make our requests, but a more responsible way of seeing prayer is about how we live and how we live each day. And I live each day a lot in conversation with the sacred, whether that's in conversation with my ancestors, in conversation with the spirits of the land, or in a Christian context, one would say the Holy Spirit that moves through all things. It's about relationship that's in context of how one's living, as opposed to a simple moment of time of an action, of, like going to church on Sunday. So that's how I view prayer. So I view it as a relationship with the sacred that is ongoing throughout the day. And see that as not only valuable, but necessary.
Mm-hmm. Very good. So we are in our last 5 minutes of the show. So calling now to all our listeners, if you would like to ask a question to Kedar directly, you can call in now. Our phone number is 657-383-1635. And Kedar is here for you. So if you feel like you need guidance in your life, if everything that he's been saying so far resonates with you, we have 15 minutes for questions. Otherwise, we will still be talking together for 15 more minutes. So let me see.
I'll be glad to speak with someone.
Yes, hello?
Hello?
Hello. Say yes, hello. We have a call, Kedar. Hello, can you please tell us your name?
Sure. My name's Scott Whitman.
Hey, Scott.
Hello, Scott. Thanks for calling in. We have Kedar here with us. Is there anything that he's been connected with you, or would you like to ask him any question? Maybe he can help you out with something?
Yeah, thanks. I was wondering if you had any feeling on, I moved from the United States to Peru to develop and create a show about mysticism that I could then go back to the United States and sell and actually create a show about traveling the world. And I was wondering if anything came to you in terms of making this successful or making it sort of more obstacle free.
So, yes, a lot comes to mind right away. And that recognizing what called you to, is it Peru you said? That where you are now? Okay.
Yes.
So what called you to Peru, being the land itself, might be, as they say, an Apu or a mountain spirit or something about the land itself sent you the signal that said, come here. And so going to that place that you recognize as having sent the call and making offerings to the spirits of the land or the mountain spirit in acknowledgement of having received the call, and leaving offerings there in that place, and also beginning dialogue with what is it here that I need to be aware of that will assist in the delivery of this information. So the context of, again, your relationship to the spirits of the land, the ancestors of that land, that whatever that was that sent you the initial call is forming that relationship. And then the other is the relationship to the mysticism carriers in your own ancestry. And you may not know who they are, but they know who you are. And my knowing would be that if this is your medicine to deliver, then you are connected with certain ancestral relationships that carry that same medicine. And so you want to activate the dialogue between you and the ancestors that carry this impulse of gift or impulse of medicine to be delivered, so that the connection there begins to feed you. So the messages you then have to offer are offered on behalf. You become the voice. I mean, just in terms of the delivery of your information becomes the voice of the ancestors, becomes the voice of the mountain spirit or the or a particular lake that you're connected to. It's the delivery of the medicine and gift through the particular form that you're delivering it becomes a not simply a desire, but a responsibility to bring through this message. So forming these relationships enables you to not be alone with the struggle of it or the challenges of it, and also gives you places to access information and support and guidance from. And then also something for you that's coming through is also an acknowledgement of the spirits of the land from which you're born. Have something really important around this particular work that you're doing to connect in there, so that you're not disconnected from the very spirits of the land that were here to welcome you when you came, and to inscribe that particular frequency of energy and medicine on you, because that's where you were born. So there's I often recommend to people they carry some earth or a stone or something from their birth land, because there's resources of support, guidance, love, and wisdom that was there to receive you and support you. So it's these alliances that help you navigate forward. Does that make sense?
That's helpful, yeah. Yeah,
thank you very
I
much, Scott, for
yeah,
calling.
Makes...
Let's see if we have.
Thank you.
Yes, thanks much.
You're very
for calling.
Welcome.
We'll
thank
keep
you for calling
on
in, Scott.
Doing the interview together. Thanks very much for calling in. So
bye.
Let's see if we have any more calls. And if not, we will keep on with our interview chatter. So you heard in this development that you've had, it was amazing of you. Thanks much for helping our listener out. You heard a repeated call to follow what you earlier mentioned as a vision quest. It was the first time it was 4 days and nights in the mountains of Sierra Nevada. And you were fasting at 9,000 feet. How was that experience for you?
Well, to try and cloak it in words would certainly not do it justice in the time we have. But what I could say is that it helped align me really with the memory and the passion of that which I'm here to offer. And in that experience, it came on the third day in the form of a deep expression of grief, and the words, bring the people home. And so over the past, 20-some plus years ago, that message, bring the people home, has taken on a lot of different contexts of expression, but it was that both in terms of expanding to recognize ancestors and also recognizing descendants, and what does it mean to bring the people home? What does it mean to bring me home? Which became in time another way of holding that. That activated experience, so that bringing the people home was also a reflection of bringing myself home. So that's, and again, in the short time we have, that would be probably the most profound imprint or thing that was left with me in that experience.
So how do you feel this influences your current work at Rites of Passage Council? How is the work you offer there? Do you include ancestor healing? Because we just heard you talking to this listener about the importance of ancestry. How long does a treatment with you last? You also do retreats. Can you tell us a little bit more about your work?
So, yeah, there's various ways to work with me. If you were to go to my website, which is my name, and it's spelled K-E-D-A-R, Brown, B-R-O-W-N.com, it lists various ways that you might work with me and various things that I'm doing. The longest program I have is an 11-day program, Vision Quest Ceremony program, that's done in different places. And it does include working with ancestors as part of that preparation toward going out on the mountain. We also have a program coming up in Texas called The Road Ahead and the Indigenous Heart. And that is coming up in March, about third week in March in Texas, and that's listed on the website. And that particular one is how to integrate the wisdom teachings of the past as a way of navigating forward responsibly into the future. So that one you could also check out. There's some we're doing over in Europe, in the Highlands of Scotland. We have a program called that's focused on working with the spirits of the land, called the Sacred Landscape and the Ancestral Memory and Belonging. We'll be working with ancestors and the spirits of the land in the Western Highlands of Scotland. Also offer a couple of grief rituals coming up in England. That's based on some of the teachings from Melodoma Somme that I learned around community grief rituals. And those are also a couple of those in Europe, in northern England and southern England. And then folks could call me at my, they can call me at 828-231-4290. And I do Skype sessions with folks, or people sometimes come for an individualized retreat where I'll just take them out onto the land and work with them for a half day or a day. So there's a different ways I can work with folks. And what's coming up this year, what's available this year.
Yes. So you will be offering the Road Ahead and the Indigenous Heart Retreat just outside Dallas, Texas. Who can benefit from assistance, and what will you be working on? To all our listeners, Keter is offering a very special discount only for Inner Healers Radio listeners. So you really want to listen to this part of the interview.
So this this program offered outside of Dallas, a couple hours outside of Dallas, the Road Ahead and the Indigenous Heart. Is a weekend program. We begin on a Thursday night, end on a Sunday. And it offers a context of work, really including everything that I've been speaking of, a way to begin to look at the impasses of your own life and how to move beyond those impasses and in a way to live a much more clear, conscious, and inspired life in the context of relationship with deep ecological awareness and ancestral awareness. The particular rituals and things that we do in the weekend really come out of the weekend. They are formed from the group itself. Once I'm with the group and we start working together, the particular elemental rituals, whether we do a grief ritual or an ancestor ritual, these things come out of the presentation of the energy of the group. And if you are interested in learning more about that, you could contact Ashley Ray, and her email address is ashleyray@gmail.com. And she's coordinating and hosting that particular event. if folks are interested in that.
Mm-hmm. So you're intuitively braiding together your clinical background with indigenous wisdom teachings. What kind of benefits can someone who works with you in this retreat experience?
So the alleviation of any anxiety, confusion, depression, those type of psychological challenges can be shifted, alleviated, and shifted. For those that are interested in actually learning methods of how to integrate the clinical and the indigenous. So for therapists or practitioners of various forms of healing that want to see how do you integrate these two worlds, they could benefit from attending as well and experience, learning by experience how that's done. So both for those who are looking for personal growth and change, and also those who are interested in professional growth and change.
Mm-hmm. So people from all walks of life can go to this retreat, right? Maybe if people want to learn how to heal ancestral trauma and grief, and if people want to learn to live from their inspired authentic self, or they want to navigate mm-hmm. through critical life passages, or they want to explore the world that lies ahead in their lives and the lives of their descendants, they can go to this retreat, which is just outside Dallas, yes?
That is correct, yes. So it's pretty much open to everyone.
That's amazing.
It's
Thank
not,
you.
Yes.
Yes. So, is there a special age they have to have, or something special they need to take for the retreat?
So the population are adults to a retreat, and once one registers, we'll send them information on what to bring, maybe some particular reading that would be good to do beforehand. And if folks were just curious about learning more, they could also email me or call me, and I'd be glad to talk with them about it in more detail concerning their particular individual questions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's amazing. So I want to thank you, Taylor, in the name of all our listeners for being here with us today. Do you have any last words that you would like to share with our listeners about all these interviews we've been having today?
I would share a quote that I recently saw. It's by my teacher. It's interesting. It's a quote that I found from him. Let me see if I can find it here. If we run out of time, I may not be able to share it with you, but let's see. So it's a quote by Melodoma Somme. And it says, "To move toward the other world, to reach the kind of durability, stability, and anchoring strength associated with an elder, one must be able to face the worst storms of life. There is an initiation that cures the consciousness of its addiction to immediate rewards and allows for a slower pace to reveal life's hidden pearls. Such a person grows into a man or woman of resource, an elder." And so the weekend offers an experience of an initiatory passage deeper into oneself.
Thank you very much, Heather. That was beautiful. And thanks for being here with us today, for sharing your light with all of our listeners. I'm sure all the replay listeners will be very happy to connect with you through here today. And
thank
we
you
really
very much,
hope that your path is filled with blessings and with more and more people whom you can share this amazing work you've been doing for so long. Thank you very much for being here with us, and hope to have you again in the next episode someday.
Thank you very much, Luciana. It's been an honor and a privilege.
It's been an honor and a privilege to have an amazing day. Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, go well.